Just coming up to 10:30. So thanks everybody for coming this morning. I hope you've enjoyed the conference so far. I think this is the last but one session that you should be attending, so it's nearly time to go and relax. I'm sure you've all been at the bar in the evenings anyway, but you can relax properly and know that you don't have to come to any sessions tomorrow. So my name's Nick Swan. I'm going to be presenting on how to write a cloud-hosted app with Ruby on Rails for SharePoint. I'll give you a little story about how I ended up with this session and a bit of a warning for you as well. So 3 years ago, I do a SharePoint pod show with Rob Foster and Brett Lonsdale. And we were traveling down from Seattle to come to this conference 3 years ago. And I thought, you know, a week in an RV, I'm not going to be driving all the time. I'll learn something new. And so I picked up a Ruby on Rails book at the first bookstore we stopped at. And was relearning Ruby on Rails. And on the way down, the idea was that we were going to do some podcasts on the way down and publish them on the site and things like that. And so when it came to this conference and the organizer of this track decided that they wanted to have someone building a Ruby on Rails application with SharePoint, someone remembered me and that I'd done this Ruby on Rails 3 years ago and got in contact and said, you know, how about coming and doing this session for us? So be careful what new technology you learn and be careful who you tell about it, because in 1 or 2 years' time, you could find yourself up on this stage doing a presentation about it, okay? So who here is a Ruby on Rails developer? Okay, 1, 2, 3. Okay, so not many Ruby on Rails developers. That's not so bad. The Ruby on Rails code that we're going to be writing isn't going to be too complex. I'm going to be live coding, but the things that you can take away from this session will also be will help you if you're going to be building any kind of developer-hosted app on non-Microsoft technologies. So don't worry if you're not a Ruby on Rails guy. You know, from 3 years ago when I started learning or picked up that book on Ruby on Rails, after that, up until about 3 weeks ago, I hadn't done much Ruby on Rails either. So the code that we're going to be writing here, don't go for best practices on Ruby on Rails stuff, but it should get you started. And I probably am, at this moment in time, the only person who's written a Ruby on Rails application for SharePoint. So the stuff that I show you and hopefully teach you, you'll then be able to go away and get started as well. And we're also going to go from a completely standard or vanilla Ruby on Rails application all the way to having it read and write back to SharePoint too. So we'll go through all the various steps you need to do and set up in your developer environment, as well as get writing code. So just a little bit more about me. I'm a co-founder at Lightning Tools. We write some tools for SharePoint and web parts. We've been lucky enough to be involved with writing SharePoint apps since around February time. And we've got two apps in the App Store at the moment. They are built on standard Microsoft technology, so they're not built on Ruby on Rails, but you never know, we might build some Ruby on Rails apps and get them in the App Store after this presentation. I'm lucky enough to be a SharePoint Server MVP, so for doing bits and pieces in the community. That's the website, lightningtools.com. If you want to follow me in terms of what I'm up to playing golf and running and things like that, you're more than welcome to follow me on Twitter. And if you've got any questions after the session, we've got a booth at the show at 1111, so feel free to drop by afterwards or just send me an email. And all the stuff I'm going to do today, I'm going to write up as a series of blog posts on the Lightning Tools site as well, so you'll be able to go there and follow along with it yourself if you want to. So, quick overview of the agenda. We'll do a quick overview of Ruby on Rails and what it is and why we may want to be writing a SharePoint-hosted app in it. We'll go over how it's possible, so how the new app model is making it possible for us to build these Ruby on Rails applications. We'll cover some terminology, and then we're going to do lots of coding. So this isn't supposed to be an intro session. This is supposed to be a level 400 session. So we're going to do a real quick overview of what the different types of apps are that we can build again, but we're going to get right into some code as quickly as possible, OK? So Ruby on Rails. So Ruby has been a scripting language around since the 90s. The good thing about it is it can run on Windows, Mac OS, Linux. I missed out Unix as well. And it was created by a guy who's got the nickname of Mats. He's a Japanese guy, and I'm not going to try and say his full name, so we'll just know him as Mats. But Ruby really became popular when an MVC web application framework called Ruby on Rails was released as an open source framework. And this was created by a guy named David Heinemeier Hansson. And what's kind of interesting, a bit funny and ironic about this is David Heinemeier Hansson's a partner in a company called 37 Signals. And Ruby on Rails came out of an application they built called Basecamp, which is a simple project management type application. They built that with what was Ruby on Rails, extracted Ruby on Rails from that and released it as an open source project that anybody could go and build a web application on. What's kind of funny is that David Heinemeier Hansson hates SharePoint. So it's kind of funny now that we can build applications for SharePoint using the open source framework that he released. And I actually met David Heinemeier Hansson once as well at a Lean Startup conference. And I did say to him that I'm one of the guys that builds stuff for SharePoint. And he did say, I feel deeply sorry for you. So. OK, so a quick overview of the possible SharePoint app architectures. So hopefully you've been to some of the developer sessions already, and so you've seen slides like this before, because we're not going to spend too much time on it. But the types of apps we can now build are SharePoint-hosted apps. We can build auto-hosted apps. So these are apps that are going to be auto-hosted into Windows Azure for us behind the scenes. And the thing that we're most interested in terms of this session is we can build provider-hosted apps. So the provider-hosted app is just going to be putting the app package into SharePoint. When we deploy or install that application within SharePoint, it then links off to our provider or developer-hosted app that can be running on any technology. So this could be running on PHP, Ruby on Rails, as we are here. It could be doing a provider-hosted app with Microsoft technology as well. So if you didn't want to do an auto-hosted app, you could write your provider-hosted app in .NET, ASP.NET, and host it all on Azure yourself, as we have done. But obviously, it opens the opportunity up for being able to do this on other technologies. So as I said, we can use any technology. The important bit is that we're responsible for the data storage, multi-tenancy, and the backups here. So as well as being able to do or getting the flexibility of being able to write our own applications, whereas the Azure auto-hosted stuff manages all that stuff for us, building this kind of application, we're going to have to deal with this stuff ourselves. And if you're a Ruby on Rails company or you've got a Ruby on Rails app, you've probably dealt with things like multi-tenancy and user accounts and backups and stuff before, so that shouldn't be anything new. But you just have to be aware that it is something you're going to have to deal with. One of the big benefits of building a provider-hosted app is a more flexible billing model. So with the auto-provisioned apps, the user will buy it through the App Store, the SharePoint App Store, and pay then and there. With a provider-hosted app, you could kind of, and this is correct, actually, up until when I was working on the preview. I haven't checked with Microsoft recently, so you may want to check before you put your app in the App Store. But in theory, what you can do is you can put your app into the App Store for free, and when they go over to your provided hosted app, that's where you can do, give us your credit card to start using this application, and you can do your monthly billing cycles from within your own app rather than doing it through Microsoft and through the App Store. This is good, again, because it gives you more flexibility in terms of knowing who the users are and having a more closer relationship with those users. But also, Microsoft won't be taking their cut from the App Store because you're controlling the whole billing process and doing that bit there. And obviously, as I've said, you get total control over the data when you do upgrades, how you provision those upgrades. But obviously, you've got the added stress of having to manage the data storage and so on. So why would you consider doing SharePoint and Ruby on Rails? If you were going to be starting a brand new application today and you had .NET skills and SharePoint skills, use Visual Studio, use ASP.NET, MVC. The tools within Visual Studio are absolutely fantastic, as you've seen in the presentations this week. But if you've got an existing Ruby on Rails application, this is where it makes sense. You don't necessarily want to have to go and write that software as a service or web application completely from scratch. You may want to integrate it with SharePoint 2013, the existing code and the existing functionality that you've got. You may have existing skills within your company. So Ruby on Rails developers are generally quite passionate about Ruby and Rails. And if you tried to go and suggest to them that they've got to start learning Visual Studio and ASP.NET, I can't imagine that would go down particularly well. So, and there's also a cost of training as well. You're not going to want to cross-train all these guys to be .NET developers necessarily. So by making use of their existing skills as Ruby on Rails guys, you can still get that integration and get apps built and get stuff in the App Store. And then also there's ISV products. So if you've got an ISV type product that's built on Ruby or Rails and so on, again, you may want to make use of those existing skills and that existing code rather than starting again and writing an app from scratch. Okay, so just some terminology quickly to kind of set the scene so we know where we are. Again, this has all been explained in the other session, so hopefully this is just a bit of a refresher for you. So the app principle, this is what identifies our application. And we're going to go in and register a new app principle within SharePoint within Office 365. because we're doing it as a developer testing environment type thing, if we were going to want to build an application that we were going to, in the end, put in the App Store, we'd want to go and register our app principal in the seller dashboard. We're going to be using OAuth. So this is the authentication protocol that is well known across the web. So thankfully, Microsoft has adapted it. And we're going to be using OAuth as our protocol to be able to authenticate our app and user against SharePoint and be able to get data and post data back into SharePoint. So if you're using Visual Studio and you're writing either an Azure auto-hosted app or a provider app, developer app, then there's a class that's created when you create your project called Token Helper. And this does all the hard work for you around the OAuth bit. So it works with ACS to go and get an access token to allow you then to be able to create items and get data back from SharePoint. Now obviously, we don't have that Token Helper class in Ruby. So the hard work that Token Helper class is doing, we're going to have to write ourselves to work with ACS, pass over tokens, get tokens back, and then be able to execute that code against SharePoint. The context token stroke SP app token, this is the information that we first get back from SharePoint when they click on our little application icon. And it's from there that we can use our app secret to decode stuff, then work with ACS. And the eventual aim of what we want to do is get back an access token. And it's the access token that we can use to make posts and get requests to SharePoint using REST. The context token and SP app token are used interchangeably, but they're the same thing. And finally, we're going to be using REST, so the REST web services. When we're running a code and writing an application that's running off the SharePoint box, so not an Azure auto-provisioned app, but off the SharePoint box, we have to use the REST web services. Especially if you're using, if you're using Microsoft technologies again, you can use the C# client-side object model. But because we're running in Ruby on Rails and we're going to be writing Ruby code, they haven't provided that library for us, so we're going to have to be making direct REST web calls against the SharePoint server. Okay. So I stole this slide from Ted Patterson. He did give me permission to use it, but you may well have seen it in his talk before. So the first four steps we can kind of ignore in terms of this presentation. This is what happens when the user, first of all, step one, requests a SharePoint page, and it's going to display an application button of how you can click on the app. So SharePoint goes to ACS, gets the context token or SP app token, and gives it back to the user to display on the page or have it ready on the page so that when step five, the user clicks on that app button or app link within the click launch bar, they're then transported, it does a post to our Ruby on Rails application, and our Ruby on Rails application can get that context token. We then decode it. We get some values out of it, one of them called the refresh token. And we can send that refresh token to ACS. ACS knows about our application because we've registered with it. It then sends back the access token. So this is the thing we're trying to get. With the access token, which is lasts for 12 hours, we can use that access token. Step eight is to make our REST calls against SharePoint or Office 365 in our case. Number nine is we get our data back from Office 365, and then obviously our client app, the Ruby on Rails application, can render the data to SharePoint, or to the user, sorry. Okay, so Rails and SharePoint app zero to apps in 45 minutes or so. So I'm going to be typing out quite a bit of code here. I thought I'd do live coding because everybody else seems to have pre-built apps these days. So 45 minutes depends on how fat my fingers are and how many typos I make, all right? But I practiced it enough that hopefully it'll be all right. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is we're in an Office 365 tenant here. Hopefully the Wi-Fi will hold up, and that could be another thing that affects the speed of the demo. But the first thing we want to do is actually register our application with Office 365 so that Office 365 knows about it, and ultimately Access Control, ACS, Azure ACS knows about it. So this URL isn't, you can't browse to it just by clicking on a link or something, but you need to go to appregnew.ispx. And again, we're doing this within appregnew because we're just building a test developer type app. If we were going to actually host this in the App Store, we would want to do it through the seller dashboard. Come on. Go. It's not good, is it? Right, I do have a backup plan, which is a network cable. Typical, isn't it? 5 minutes before starting, this was all working fine. The problem is the MacBook Air I'm presenting on has only got one USB thing, and I have my mouse plugged into there, so I didn't want to plug the network cable in, so now I can't use my mouse, so it may make the demos harder as well, but let's go with what we've got. So this is the page on App Reg New, where we want to register our application or our app principle. So the application ID, we can just click the generate button, and it will generate a GUID for us. The app secret, again, we can click generate, and it will generate an app secret for us. The title, I'll give this one a title of Thursday. The app domain, this is going to be the domain where our application is running at. So because we're doing developer stuff, we'll do localhost 3001. The redirect URI is where SharePoint is going to, when they click on the application tile or link, where it's going to redirect the user to. And because we're using OAuth for authentication protocols and so on, this has to be a HTTPS URL. So we're going to have to do some steps when we create our Ruby app to actually get that ready and prepared to accept HTTPS requests as well, because by default, it won't accept those. So if you try just putting a normal HTTP URL in here, it won't allow you to create the app principle, so it does need to be HTTPS. So here we click Create. And you need to copy this information out. You can't get the app secret again if you click on OK and forget about that, so make sure you remember to copy it. And because I'm working, I'm going to be loading up Mac OS soon. I'm going to paste it into Evernote so I can get it back on Evernote on my Mac. Okay. Sync that as well. So that's our app principle created now. So Office 365 knows about this app principle, and ACS also knows about this app principle. So ACS will use our app secret to encode the refresh token and other information when it sends it over to our app. And we use our app secret to decode the string that it sends over so we can get the information out as well. What we want to do now is load up Visual Studio. We're going to run it as administrator. And the app package, we're actually going to use Visual Studio to create for us. This is the easiest way to do it. So we'll create a new project. We're going to create an app for SharePoint 2013. I'll just call this Thursday as well. And we'll give it the same name. I've created a developer site collection. So if you want to do any development against Office 365, you want to create a developer site collection, because this is all set up to do development and testing and things like that. So we want to select, we're going to build a provider-hosted app. And click Finish. And so Microsoft have announced that they've put out a new build of the Visual Studio tools for SharePoint 2013. I'm running on the previous version, and it all works on my previous version, but I know things look slightly different in the latest release. So when we go to our app manifest, what you'll notice, I'm not sure if they've changed this in the latest release, when you create your project and your solution, it actually creates the SharePoint app for us, which is the top one. But it also presumes that we want to use ASP.NET, so it creates an ASP.NET web application for us too. And we can only actually select the start URL to be from that ASP.NET web application. So what we need to do is go into the app manifest and open it in the XML editor and change it here. So rather than using a page from the ASP.NET web application, we want to go to HTTPS localhost 2001. And also here in the client ID, sometimes it works when you're just doing development stuff with star in there, but to be safe, I'm going to put my app ID in here. So we'll just save that. We'll go back to the designer for the app manifest. What we want to do is give our application some permissions. So this is like when you give, in Facebook, when you go to use an application and it asks for a set of permissions of what the Facebook application is allowed to do. The SharePoint apps do the same. So you only want to ask really for permissions for the types of thing you want to do, because the more permissions you ask for, the more, you know, risk a user thinks that app is going to pose, and the less likely they are to trust it and end up using your application. So only ask for the permissions you know you're going to need to use. Now, interestingly, in my application, I'm going to be posting to the newsfeed of the site. And this is where it gets... So we want to post to the microfeed. That's understandable. So we want to do write. But also, when you post to the newsfeed, it also posts to the user's my site as well. And because we're posting to the my site too, we actually have to ask for permissions across the whole tenant. And this took quite a lot of figuring out when we were working on demos and stuff for this. So we're going to ask for write permissions across the tenant, which pretty much gives us, you know, permissions across the whole of our SharePoint or Office 365 tenant. So just be aware, if you are going to do stuff with a newsfeed, your app is going to be asking for quite a lot of permissions and pose, you know, risk to the end user. And also, to be able to post to the microfeed or newsfeed of a site, you also have to ask for read permissions of the user profile. Okay, so that's all we need to do in Visual Studio to create our app package. We can now deploy it, so we'll do start. This will upload our app to SharePoint to our developer site collection. You can see it asks us, do we trust this application? Then list the permissions. So you can see, which one does it say? So it says let it edit, delete documents, and list items in all site collections. So you see, because we want to post to the newsfeed, we're actually asking for quite a lot of permissions for our application here. So, but we'll click trust it, because we know we're good developers. OK, and now if we click on Thursday, our application, you can see this does the post. This posts the context token or SP app token to what should be our Ruby on Rails application. But we haven't done that yet. So you can see it's now posted that to, if we go back to start, localhost 3001 HTTPS. So we're good to go now. We can go back to, we can go to macOS and we can start building our Rails app. So I'll just check that Evernote is synced up so I can grab that information from macOS. And I'm going to have to do a quick reboot here. Thankfully, the reboot's quite quick. Don't be surprised, by the way, when my Ruby on Rails code works if I do a little dance, because it's been quite stressful getting these demos to work. So the hardest thing, actually, while we're waiting for this to boot up is the Ruby code is actually quite succinct in what we're trying to do. Having seen the demos that the guys have been doing in .NET, you know, I'm quite surprised actually that we can do the same thing in actually less code, less lines of code. The hard bit has been working with the REST web services. The whole thing about REST is, you know, it needs good documentation for you to know how to work with those REST web services of how to get data back, what values need to be posted to create items and things like that. And as we've been working with a beta product, you know, documentation isn't perhaps their first concern. And so half of the challenge has been getting getting the right rest calls to work and things like that. So, you know, the documentation will improve, so things will get better. But, you know, this is the first as well. I never expected 3 years ago I'd be presenting at a SharePoint conference in macOS, so this is quite crazy, really. But let's go and go into our code directory. And we've got some Ruby on Rails apps already here. So let's go and create a new Rails application. So Rails new. We'll call this Thursday as well to keep it similar. Now Rails is going to go and create our basic MVC application for us. And by default, the Webbrick server, which is like IIS Express, will only listen to HTTP requests. So what we need to go and do now is set it up so that it will accept those HTTPS requests that SharePoint is sending over to us. So we need to do some funky bits and pieces in terms of generating the certificate. So if you've got a Mac, you're going to have this thing, OpenSSL, ready for you to use. So we want to create, we've got to type in three things to do. So first of all, we're going to create our private key. Okay, we need to give it a password. And then all the other fields where it asks for company name and stuff like that, we can just ignore. Okay, then we want to create our public key. Don't worry about writing these down, because like I said, I will put these up on a blog post how to do it. And I wanted to do this all manually to show you guys, you know, within 45 minutes, we can go from a blank Ruby on Rails app to having something working with SharePoint. So, okay, it asks for our password, and it generates the public key. Next, we need to generate our actual certificate. This is the most difficult bit to not fat finger. Okay. Oh. Thank you. Right, so now we look at our application. We've got four extra files that we've generated that we can use. So I'm going to try and find my way around Finder, which isn't the most... when you're used to Windows Explorer, trying to use this is difficult. Even just trying to go to like the root directory, you have to type in some special command and then you can get here. But what I want to do is go to users, Nick... code directory and my Thursday application. I'm going to copy these four files. And then within config, I'm going to create a new couple of new folders, one called cert, one called SS, and I'm going to paste those items into there. Okay, so now we need to tell Rails that we actually want to run and accept HTTP requests. So within the script folder, and again, this is all generated for us when we first go and create our application, you'll see there's a Rails, which is an executable file. And this is what is actually run when you start up your Rails application. So we'll create a copy of it, and we'll call this secure Rails. And we're going to use TextMate as our editor, which most Ruby on Rails guys love. And we can actually go in and edit this file. This is where I'm not going to type this coding, because as you'll see, there's quite a lot. Secure Rails code. So here you go. We just require a few things, which is like adding using statements at the top of C# code files. And here we tell our Rails application or Webbrick to listen on port 3001. And we tell it which certificates files we want to use. So those are the ones we generated just as test certificates. OK, so let's save that file. Let's try running our application. So we want to tell, rather than using the default Rails. We want to run script secure Rails. That looks good. And so within Safari now, let's go to our developer site collection. I hope everyone's got their fingers crossed, because I certainly have. When we click on Thursday, it's going to give you a warning, and it's going to say that certificate that we generated, you know, isn't legit. And that's just because we've done it on our development environment and because we need to listen on HTTPS. So we're OK to click Continue here. Now, you need also be aware, when you're doing some development stuff, when it pops up this warning and says, do you want to continue, it loses all of the values that its SharePoint has posted to this application. And so when you're doing your development and you're trying to get query parameters and stuff like that from the post body, if you click continue, your code's going to error. But if you go back to SharePoint, click on the app again, because you've accepted the certificate warning, it will then go back to your app and you'll have those post values to get. But because we're not doing anything with post values, it says welcome aboard. This is the default Ruby on Rails kind of screen. And so this is our first SharePoint application running in Ruby on Rails. Woohoo! Okay, so that's not very interesting though, is it, to be fair? What we're going to do is we're going to get rid of this default page. So we'll go into TextMate, and we want to delete index.html, which is what that page is. Move to trash. And we will go and use some Rails commands to Rails generate controller. We're just going to create a home controller and an index view. We're going to do all our coding in here. So again, this goes and generates some bits and pieces for us. We have to tell Rails that this is what we want our new default page to be. So within config, roots, you can see it's got our root setup, which is the get home index, but we need to tell Ruby that we want, or Rails, that we want the root to actually be home index. And as you'll see, it's worth testing every little bit you do. So we stopped our server, so we just need to start it again. So come back in. It always seems as well, the first time that you kind of go from your app or try and load the app, it takes a little while. So don't be surprised if you get this initial pause, but then it's quite quick and snappy from that point onwards. So this is just our standard index view. Nothing cool there. We're not doing anything yet with SharePoint. So let's get to write some code. The first thing we're going to want to do is something quite simple. So we're going to want to get the title of the web where we've clicked on to come from in our application. So let's go. We can close these two down now. To our actual app. So this is where the controllers are. So those of you who are familiar with MVC type applications, this will make sense. But we're going to write all of our code within this controller. So again, you probably want to do little baby steps each time to make sure that each part you're doing works before trying to take on the next challenge. So the first thing we want to do is just make sure that when we're, I was going to change back to the slides and show you again, but when our Ruby on Rails application, or when the user, sorry, clicks on SharePoint first time, and comes through to our Ruby on Rails application, we want to make sure that we've got that SP app token or context token to then be able to do the next step, which is decode it. So let's make sure we can get that SP app token. Save that within our view, which is what is actually rendered to the user. We'll try and display it. So right, let's refresh. Oh, and we see it doesn't come back. Let's try posting from SharePoint again. Right, so that actually, when I didn't show the SP app token, that was because the first time where I accepted that certificate and it lost all the variables. So going back to SharePoint, clicking on the app again, you can see now we get our SP app token. So you can see, this is what has been encoded using the app secret. So what we want to do is, this is actually a JSON web token, so we need to use a couple of libraries now within Rails to be able to do the stuff we want to do. So within a file called, I'm sure I could do it with my mouse, the gem file. So I consider this like, you know, in Visual Studio when you go and add references to various DLLs you want to use. So we're going to make use of JWT, which is a JSON web token library. We're going to use this thing called REST client, which we're going to actually make our REST calls with. And we're going to make use of this coolly named library called NoCoGiri, which is going to do our XML processing. And back within our home controller, so that's like adding references to assemblies. Now we want to actually tell our kind of code that we're going to use them. So this is like adding the using statements at the top of our C# files. So we're going to say require JWT. REST client and require NoCoGiri. Okay. So let's try and decode this SP app token that's coming from SharePoint, or has been posted to SharePoint. So we write decode equals JWT.decode. We pass in the SP app token. We're going to pass in our secret, and the last parameter is false. This is where, hopefully, I'm going to open up Evernote, and it's going to show me what that app secret was that I saved, because otherwise we can't get it back, and we're a bit buggered. Okay, here's our secret. Ooh. You can see how many tests I've done on Wednesday to make sure this all works for you. So we'll paste this in here. And again, baby steps, let's go and just display what this decoded string is going to show us. So again, the work we're doing here is all what is done in the token helper class within the Visual Studio projects that you create. So we've got to do this all manually ourselves. Because we've added some things in our gem file, we need to just restart the WebBrick server again. If we refresh the page, here we go. So this is that SP app token or context token decoded with the app secret. So only us and ACS know what the app secret is. So in theory, this is really secure. You should never share your app secret with anybody else. Keep that secret, obviously. So a few bits and pieces that we'll take a look at here. The most important couple of ones are the security token service URI. So this is the ACS server URL that we're going to do a post to with our refresh token to get an access token. Once we have the access token, we can go and execute our REST calls against SharePoint. So the refresh token is here. You can see that again, this is another big long string. It's kind of encrypted. A couple of other bits and pieces that are quite interesting is this AUD. So this ID here is the ID of the tenant or the Office 365 instance that we're working with. This ID here, this is a domain, and this is actually our app ID. What else here is interesting? You can see it starts off initially as just the general Ruby hash, but then it goes into actually a blob of JSON. So we're going to actually need to kind of parse that JSON to be able to get the refresh token out and be able to work with it. So let's do that. So again, within Home Controller, let's do, we didn't require JSON, required JSON. And first bit we're going to get access to is the app context. So this is the big blob of JSON that I showed you. And let's get the ACS server URL first. So ACS server equals JSON.parse the app context. And it is the security token service URI. Again, because we're doing this step by step, let's make sure that is the ACS server or we've got the right value out and our code's working. Okay, refresh. Cool, so that URL we got out okay. The next bit I'm going to actually copy and paste in because this is a little bit of typing. So part one, part two, part three. We'll go into exactly what that is in a minute. But this is the actual information that we're going to post to ACS. So we're going to say we're posting a refresh token, we're posting a client ID, which is that AUD string, which was the tenant ID, the domain, and the app ID. We're going to be posting our client secret, which again, I'll just copy from here and paste in. We're going to be sending across our refresh token. And finally, this resource, which is this part one, part two, part three, kind of concatenated together. Now, if you look, part one is quite interesting because if you look carefully here, it makes the kind of word office. And so this is an identifier to ACS to show that we're kind of working or coming from an Office 365 instance. If you're doing stuff with Exchange, apparently there's the lettering is supposed to look like Exchange and Link is supposed to look like Link and stuff like that. So this is an ID to say to ACS we're coming from Office 365. We're passing in our Office 365 tenant URL. And then finally, we're passing in, this is the app ID. Okay. So let's try and do our post to ACS to try and get our access token. So result equals REST client post. We're going to post to that ACS URL that we got, and we're going to simply post the post data. So this Ruby hash here. Again, because we're doing it step by step, let's see what result we get back. Save it. Fingers crossed. I see what I haven't done. Oh, no. Decode. Actually, I'm going to change that to decoded, because that's what the other code expects as well. Ooh. Okay, let's try that again. Okay, cool. So we've done our post to ACS, and we're getting back token type, which is bearer, and this is our access token. So this is the access token that's good for 12 hours, and we can use this access token to do get requests, post requests, whatever REST requests we want to do against that SharePoint Office 365 instance and that kind of SP web that we've given permissions to for our app to use. So let's go and do something simple first of all with this access token. And we're going to use this quite a lot. So we'll just create something that we can reuse. We'll create it as a Ruby hash again. So we have it as authorization bearer. And this is all the stuff that isn't documented and we've had to kind of figure out as we were going along. And I need to do one more step. It comes back as JSON again. So we need to parse it out. Again, just to make sure, let's make sure that it's being displayed correctly. Okay. So there we go. So this is the actual value. When we make our REST calls, we have to put this in the post body. And it's going to be authorization, bearer, and then our access token, which is the access token that we've got back from ACS. And again, as Visual Studio developers doing this all in .NET, we don't need to worry about this. This is what Token Helper does for us behind the scenes. But if we're going to be working with PHP or Ruby on Rails or even JavaScript, we're going to have to do bits of this ourselves. Okay. Let's actually get some data back. So, so let's do response. We want to get back the title of our web the website where we installed our application. So we're going to hard code the URL. This is where we're going to make use of the underscore API, so the REST API, and we're just going to call, down a bit, web and the title, and we pass in our auth token. So that's the auth token that we've concatenated together in the step above, where it has authorization bearer plus access token. So the response we get back is a chunk of XML, so we want to actually get that out, so we're going to say title equals and this is where we use the NoCodeGiri library. Oh yeah, good spot, thank you. I'll buy you a beer later on, whoever that was. Okay, and we want to put out that title. Once we've got this first sample going, it's mostly I'm copying and pasting code in, so don't worry, it's not all this bad. Okay. Let's refresh again. Oh, 404 not found. Okay, our first demo, or our second demo has worked. We simply got back the title of the web that we wanted. I never thought I'd get an applause just for getting back the title of like a website, but hooray. Okay, so let's do some a bit more interesting stuff. And we're going to stop writing as much code as we have done now. Let's get back the lists that are on our site. So we'll get rid of this. Yep. And we want to, no, I didn't want to do that, sorry. Because we just want to make use of the same REST call, but we're going to, instead of saying get the title, we're going to get lists. Makes more sense. And we're going to do an XPath query again just to get back the title of the list. And rather than just display one title, got a few to display, so we just want to iterate through this in our actual view. So we'll save this, refresh. Oh, I tell you what I didn't do. Change that to lists. Okay, so there we get back all the different lists that we have on our site. So what you'll notice, though, is if we take this URL, and again, this is just general REST stuff, so this is pretty cool of how we can build up our REST queries to bring back just the data we want. If we copy that out and open up Firefox, put this URL in here. Oh, it doesn't show us all the XML. It's Chrome I need to use for this bit. You can see, just from the size of the scroll bar, it brings back everything to do with these lists. So we can just use the query refiners just to bring back exactly what it is that we want to bring back. So we can just say $select equals title. And you'll see, again, from the scroll bar, this brings back a lot less information. So you want to be wary about bringing back more than you're actually going to need to display and just select what it is that you want from the REST call to bring back. So we'll just change that. Rather than bringing back all of that XML across the wire, you know, we'll be a bit more aware and just bring back select equals title. And we can put multiple columns in there as well to bring back multiple columns, that's no problem. Let's just see if that still brings back our titles. Yeah. Cool. So, perhaps now we want to get just a particular list rather than all the lists. So again, we can build up our REST call and just say get by title. We need to escape that. And this should bring back just the document library. And again, it just brings back the title, so 404 not found. Get by title. Yep, so that just brings back just the documents list or library. And if we want to bring back the actual items, I'll get rid of the select bit here. Again, we can just extend our query just to say items. And we've got one document in there, and it's called Dimitri to test. Quite simple. So you can see how we can just build up our REST URL to make the different calls that we need to make and bring back the data we want to bring back. Okay, we want to do something a bit more interesting though. We want to actually add a list item. So there's three things we need to do here. The first one is if I want to grab this URL out of here. So there's three things we need to do. First of all, we need to know the actual type of item we're going to add. Then we need to get this thing called the form digest value, which is another security token to stop things called replay attacks. And then we can actually make our post to SharePoint. No. Okay. Anyway, if you get this URL right, there's going to be this thing called the list item entity type full name. And you need to get this value out of this first call to be able to then put into the post information that you're going to post to SharePoint to create your item. I'll try and get this URL right in a minute. But if we go back. Oh, yeah, good point. So this is where live coding is so fun because we get audience participation. And it shows you understanding what I'm trying to tell you as well, you see? Cool. Okay, so you see here this list item entity type full name of sp.data.shared.document.item. We need to get this value so when we make our post to SharePoint to actually insert a list item, we need to insert that into the actual body of the post that we're making. So I will get rid of these two lines of code here. And get list item. That's right. So we're going to do a REST client.get just to our list, and we're going to use the test list. So bring that information back. And then we do a simple, again, XPath query just to get the list item entity type full name there. Okay. The next thing we need to do is to get that context information, or the form digest URL, as it's called in the XML that comes back. So see here, get context information, and we do a post this time to just show you the URL. That's where having my mouse would be useful. API, just context info, and you get the form digest value, which you can see on the next line, where we get back that value, and we need to include that to stop the replay attacks. Or SharePoint needs that value to stop replay attacks, where if someone intercepted the actual information in the post that we're making, in theory they could, you know, add lots of list items in. So this form digest value is unique for one post, and then you would need to get another form digest value to make another post to create another list item. So let's go and add the post data. So this is what we're actually going to post to SharePoint. And you see, this is going to be some JSON, but we've created it as a Ruby hash. So we're just creating the underscore metadata, the type. This is where we have to pass in the list item entity type. So that's the value we got back from the first call. And the title is just going to be Hello from Vegas. I'll change this because I think I might have a demo item. I'm going to say Hello. Okay, final thing is we want to actually make our post. And this post is done slightly differently. Where we create the REST resource first, and we pass in the URL. And we're going to be posting to the test list. And again, we just include items. So what's interesting about this REST URL is if you do a GET request, it's going to return list items to you. But if you do a POST request, it's going to actually insert a list item. So you can use the same URL, but a different verb, and it's going to do one or the other things. We actually have to add a bit more information to the headers here to be able for SharePoint to actually accept this REST request. So we actually have to say that we're going to accept application JSON OData verbose. So this is part of the OData spec that we need to, the reason we need to include this. The X request digest, this is the form digest value that we get back from context information. And finally, we need to pass in our authorization bearer plus the access token. And finally, we do resource.post and post data. Now, this had me stuck for like nearly a week. Although we set the content type explicitly to content type equals application JSON and the OData verbose, if you don't change it to be JSON, although it's worked previously where we've posted a Ruby hash and it's converted it automatically to JSON for us and posted it okay, when you're doing a post with this particular REST client library, if you don't post it as JSON and you set the content type to be application, it changes the content type back to be something else, which is, I think, X-application something something else. And so your REST post request, because SharePoint's only expecting the content type to be application JSON, it will fail. So always make sure to explicitly say on these types of posts to use to underscore JSON, so it will convert this Ruby hash here explicitly to JSON. Otherwise, you're going to get errors. And they're really confusing errors as well. I think they might be like unauthorized errors, which again means nothing to say that you're sending the wrong content type over. But there you go. OK, so let's save that. Let's go back to Safari. We're not actually outputting anything new here to the browser. We're just going to execute that post. And this is just our view that's wrong, actually. So we can go back to our view. Because we're not doing anything with those lists anymore, we can take that out. And it's executed, so that's good. If we go to our site collection, we can go to site contents, test list. And you see, because we ran that code twice, but the view was wrong first time, you can see we've inserted hello to UK people. And I had in my, to get into my presentation somewhere, a reference to the Ryder Cup. So there you go. Sorry, guys. Okay. So we've got three more demos to do, quite quick ones. So that's inserting list items. You can see the three-step process you have to go through. You have to get I can never remember the full name of it, the list item entity type, get the context info, and then you can finally make your post, pass in the authorization or the access token over as well. What we're going to do now is create a simple file in a document library. So I'm going to add a file here. Just call it test.txt. Just save it. And we just need to add in the code to actually upload that file. It's quite simple, actually. This is probably the easiest bit to get working. So we can do file equals file.open. We go to the Rails root directory, and we simply pass in a test.txt. Now this is interesting, because if you do file.read, this works when you're using a simple text file, but if you're trying to upload a docx file or some other type of file, because they're actually zip files rather than just a text file that you can read, you get an error about UTF encoding. So when you're uploading, it's best just to get into the habit of doing file.open rather than file.read, and you'll be able to upload the docx files okay as well. So again, we're just going to create a simple resource that we're going to post to. And you'll see the URL. Again, we do our lists, get by title, documents. This is a bit different again with the REST URL. So we go to the root folder, files, add, pass in the URL or the file name that we want to call it. And we're just going to say overwrite equals true. Again, the headers we pass in, we accept application JSON back. We pass in our context info or our form digest. And again, we pass in the authorization, which is our access token. Save that. Back, refresh. It hasn't shown an error, so it should have worked. If we go to documents, you can see here we've uploaded our test file. That's cool. Let's check it opens. Hello to everyone in Vegas. Let's try it with a Word document. And I did have a document here. Where is it? Just copy this. Again, we'll post it just into the root of our application if we can. I must do it using Finder, I think. Okay, this is me just trying to struggle and find my way around macOS. But it's a similar thing where, again, we just have to make sure when you're trying to upload a docx file, you do file.open rather than file.read, because you'll get an error then. And again, you just do a rest post passing in the actual file itself. So this is a lot easier because you don't have to pass any JSON over. But again, we're adding it to the URL equals hello world.docx. And we pass over the same headers as well. Now, I'll be honest, I'm too honest in my presentations in terms of this works if you're uploading quite a small Word docx. I haven't been able to get it to work if you're uploading a large one. I haven't been able to figure it out either, but if I do figure out how to do it, then I'll post on the Lightning Tools blog and let you guys know. But it works for a small docx, not for a large one, though. Okay. The last thing I wanted to show you guys how to post to the news feed. So again, we need to do the same thing in terms of getting the context information, the form digest value, sorry. And post to the news feed. Here we go. Now, this is quite complex and horrible, and again, took a long time to work. And I've got two samples of the post data that we can do. I've got it in JSON, first of all. So you can see, when you want to start posting things to the newsfeed, it gets quite complex. And again, it's quite complex because we're posting to the newsfeed of the site, but this also posts to the user's My Site as well. So this is why it's a bit more complex. So we have to use this thing called REST creation data. Again, you can see we have to pass in the type. I've hard-coded it this time rather than getting it from the list. Again, here we have to pass through a type. And the actual content text that we want to pass in, say this was my first publish using REST. I'll change this to say Liverpool. Doesn't necessarily have to be true, but okay. So that's it as a concatenated JSON string. This is that same thing as a Ruby hash. So again, you can see how complex it can get to build these JSON objects up, or the Ruby hash up to do. And again, this is where there's no documentation at the moment, so it's a certain degree of trial and error to get it right. But Again, I mean, it's quite simple. Once we get the JSON right and we know what we're going to be doing, we can just do resource equals a resource, the URL that we want to post to. So this is slightly different too. Again, this was quite difficult to work out. Rather than just posting to, say, the newsfeed list, because it's part of social, we post it to _API social.feed actor, then it's open brackets, item equals a parameter, feed post, and then we actually pass in the URL of the newsfeed that we want to post to. Yeah, I see a few people going like that. So you can see how kind of complex this can get and where you need the good documentation to be able to figure these bits and pieces out. Once we know the URL that we want to post to and the actual JSON that we need to post, things are quite relatively simple. So again, we just pass through our header, the accept, application JSON, that's what we accept back. The form digest value to stop these replay attacks happening, so it can only post once. And again, the authorization and the access token that we got back from ACS. And we actually make our post. So let's just save that. We'll run it. It takes a bit longer again because we're almost doing two posts, one to the new site and one to the my site. Well, sorry, it's doing in the background one to the my site. You'll see again as well, because we're doing a post, we're explicitly setting it to JSON just to make sure that we don't get any kind of error coming back. And if we go and look at the newsfeed itself, we'll see posted Europe won the Ryder Cup. Oh, I know why that was. That's because I've showed you two demo how to construct the JSON first, and then it has a Ruby hash. I didn't change the text in the Ruby hash. So it has posted Europe has won the Ryder Cup, which is great. So you'll see it's posted it here to the news feed of the actual individual site we're working on. So this is a developer site collection. If we go to my site, and the newsfeed on my site, you'll see it's also posted here from the developer site that Europe have won the Ryder Cup. And this is where and why you need to give permissions across the whole tenant, because when you're making a post to the newsfeed, it's also posting to the my site too. So that's where the whole, you have to ask for lots of permissions stuff goes on. If you want to know more about posting to newsfeeds and things like that, there's Matt McDermott is doing a session after this one on social programming stuff. So I recommend you go to that. That'd be really good. Okay, that's the end of the demos. Whew. All the code has worked, really, generally. Thanks to those who helped out now and again. So, just to wrap up, a few things you're going to have to think about doing these types of applications with Ruby on Rails or with PHP and things like that. You get back a refresh token when you decode the SP app token or the context token. Now, that refresh token is valid for 6 months. And you use that refresh token to go and get an access token from ACS you can then use against SharePoint. So the refresh token is valid for 6 months. The access token itself is valid for 12 hours. And so it's a good idea, rather than keeping having to make those requests and whatever to ACS, is to store that access token somewhere. So if you're making 3 or 4 requests, within 5 minutes or something, to use the same access token. It's obviously sensitive information. You don't want that access token being given to the wrong person or it falling into the wrong hands. So don't put that access token in a cookie. What you want to do is I'll switch back to my view of Ruby. You will see, actually I broke my code. Let me just fix it a sec. Let's decode it. When this comes back, and we have our decoded thing again, you see this value here, cache key? So this is a hash of the user, the tenant, and the application ID. And this value is safe for you to put in a cookie, and then use that value to look up in your database where you've got stored, say, the access token and a refresh token, and pick out that access token and refresh token. With the access token and the refresh token, you do get back date times for when they're still valid. So store those date times as well. So when you get the cache key from the cookie, look in your database, have you got an access token? Yes. Is it still valid? If it is, great, use it. If not, check the refresh token. If the refresh token is still valid, then you can go to ACS and get a new access token. If it's not still valid, the refresh token, so it's been 6 months since it's been refreshed or whatever, then you can redirect the page back to a URL called appredirect.aspx, passing in the application ID and the redirect URL, and SharePoint will then do another post back to you with the SP app token so that you can decode it, get a new refresh token, and start the whole process again. Okay, but bottom line is, don't start storing access tokens in cookies. That's not really secure. Store the cache key there. Use the cache key as the kind of an ID column in your database for users or something, and store access tokens and refresh tokens against that cache key. Just says there, the refresh token key is good for 6 months. The access token is good for 12 hours. Because you have to deal with a multi-tenancy, this is just a little bit about how we did one of our apps, Social Squared. We had an authentication database which stored information about the individual SP webs in Office 365 and the users that people were coming from. And kind of like SharePoint, we then had content databases that stored the actual content of the forums in. And when we got the cache key and the SP web the user was coming from, we looked them up in the auth database, figured out which content database they were in, and then we knew which content database to go. So we could scale that out by adding as many content databases as we went to. And as a new person installed the application, we could say, well, this content database is more empty than the others. Put this particular site instance into this content database and work from there. The Chrome control, I've not demoed here. The Chrome control, one thing, again, to be aware of, when you're using the Chrome control, it uses the query string parameter, SP host URL. So this knows, so it knows where to get the JavaScript from to render the Chrome control, and also how to render kind of the back button and things like that. As users say, we've just gone to a home page here and we're sitting here and it's all good because the URL and query string are here. As we navigate around our application, that SP host URL is going to disappear from the query string because we're just clicking on links. So what you need to do is, for any link, internal link within your application, make sure you reappend the SP host URL onto any internal links. So it's always there within your application. The Chrome control can then get that host SP host URL and render the Chrome control OK for you. And that's it. Thank you very much for your patience, first of all, with the Wi-Fi and also with my fat-fingered encoding. Thanks to those people who helped me out spotting the typos. I'm going to be at the Lightning Tools booth shortly after this, or you're welcome to come up and ask any questions you want. We're also doing a live SharePoint Podshow recording thing at 1:45 at the community booth area. So if you fancy coming and watching that, please feel free to. Finally, fill out the evaluations. You know, they're really useful for us, for all the presenters, so please go ahead and do that. Other than that, enjoy the last session of the conference, and I wish you all a safe journey home. Thank you.